massacres. The Palestinian death toll since October the 7th now stands at around 38,800. Our correspondent Motiabu Mosabe joined us earlier from central Gaza City of Deir al-Bala to give us the latest on the situation in the besieged strip.
Let me begin with the appalling massacre that was committed over the last night when the Israeli fighter jets attacked and destroyed a residential building in Az-Zawaida town. At least 9 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were slaughtered while they were sleeping inside their house. In the meantime, another attack took place in Al-Burej refugee camp when the Israeli fighter jets also destroyed another house there. 2 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as a consequence. Meanwhile, 2 Palestinians were killed in a civilian car that was hit moments ago in Deir al-Bala city by the Israeli fighter jets. 2 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered till this moment. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery continued to shell and attack the eastern parts of Deir al-Balah and al-Musaddar town in the eastern part of the central area of Gaza Strip. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained and continued against the eastern parts of the city, basically Abasan and Bani Suhaila towns. When it comes to Rafah city, as you know, the Israeli occupation forces continued to detonate more Palestinian residential squares in addition to the chronic and the ceaseless artillery shelling targeting the central area of Rafah city. Needless to mention that the current situation on the ground is still over tragic for the Palestinian people who are still being deprived of having any access to the basic humanitarian needs, as the Israeli occupation forces are still closing Rafah crossing and preventing any entry of the humanitarian supplies to the entire population in Gaza Strip.
Palestinians in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala are facing water shortages as water pumping systems have ceased to work. The Israeli regime has been accused of directly targeting the water storing and pumping infrastructures. Let's take a listen to some of the Palestinians talking about the lack of access to water and other related problems.
With the existence of more than 800,000 people, given the lack of water, partial lack of water creates a crisis. We are talking about summer and high temperatures, where one needs to shower at least once a day, wash one's clothes and utensils. The lack of this method in pumping water will cause several diseases and epidemics, and the struggle of people in Deir al-Balah is huge. They do not have money to buy water. Whether clean or salty water will require immense efforts to provide the needed amounts of fuel to bypass this crisis for this huge number of people.
We use around 20 to 30 liters daily due to the heat wave. We drink a lot of water and we sweat it out quickly since there is neither cold nor clean water. We plead to the organization to pay attention to the displaced people to get us clean water until God eases this all on us.
We suffer a lot for water. I get very tired to get the water from Zawadi area to get a gallon of water. And diseases are spreading. The water is not clean. It is salty. We want clean water. I also suffer from kidney problems, and I do not have money to buy filtered water.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says at least 8 schools have been targeted by Israeli strikes in Gaza during the past 10 days. UNRWA Commissioner General Philip Lazzarini said 6 of the agency's schools were among those targeted across the blockaded territory. He added that hitting schools by Israel has become an almost daily occurrence and has robbed Gazan girls and boys of their childhood and education. Stressing that Israel's blatant disregard of international humanitarian law continues unabated, Lazzarini said all rules of war have been broken in Gaza. His comments came just a day after the Palestinian Education Ministry said Israeli strikes have killed over 9,100 students in Gaza since the war began. Over 600,000 students have also been barred from enrolling in schools. Israel has resorted to the assassination drive in Lebanon amid the regime's failure to stop Hezbollah's retaliatory missile and drone strikes. The Lebanese resistance movement and the Israeli military remain engaged in clashes amid the Gaza genocide. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Salah has the latest on the growing tensions along Lebanon's southern border.
Well, after what seemed to be a day of somewhat calm, Hezbollah actually, in some cases, like, for example, on Eid holidays and yesterday because of the Ashura processions, in order for people who are commemorating Ashura, they did keep a low profile yesterday. There were not any major operations. Today, early in the morning at 6:30, the Israelis began a new aggression and launched an assassination, actually a drone attack, targeted a pickup truck in the area of near Gaza, which is in the Bekaa area, actually, the western Bekaa. And so this led to the martyrdom of one of the members of the Jamaa Islamiyah, the Muslim Brotherhood party here in Lebanon, and his name is Muhammad Jubara. And this is not the first member of the Jamaa Islamiyah who has been assassinated by the Israelis through these drone attacks. And the reason why they are targeting members of Jamaa Islamiyah, as they are targeting members of Hezbollah, of course, and commanders of Hezbollah, is because Jamaa Islamiyah is closely cooperating and coordinating with the resistance movement Hezbollah, and is also launching operations despite the fact that they are minimal. We have limited operations, launching of rockets in some areas. They are active, but still, the Israelis have begun this, of course, strategy and this series of assassinations, starting from the assassination of Sheikh Saleh al-Aruri, a prominent figure of Hamas in the southern suburbs of Beirut, and that basically began a lot of assassinations that seemed to target individual vehicles in order to assassinate specific members of either Hezbollah or Jamaa Islamiyah. And even in some instances, we had assassinations of Hamas members.
The U.S. and its allied forces have reported launched yet another airstrike against Yemen. Reports say the American and British warplanes targeted International Airport in western Hodeidah province. There is no confirmation about possible damage or casualties yet. The U.S. and its allies have launched such attacks multiple times in recent months amid their frustration in the face of Yemen's anti-Israel maritime operations. In retaliation to Western aggression and in support of Gaza, Yemen launched anti-Israel and anti-West operations. The Yemeni army first began its naval operation against Israeli ships and put a ban on other vessels heading to ports in the occupied territories. Dozens of ships have been targeted in the Red and Arabian Seas as well as the Gulf of Aden. Sana'a has said such operations will continue as long as Israel keeps committing genocide in Gaza. Well, press conference about Israel's brutal war on Gaza and the humanitarian crisis there was scheduled to be held at the Italian Parliament. It was called off following pressure from Italy's government on the opposition lawmakers. A far-right ruling party says the conference was canceled because figures banned by the Israeli regime would have attended it.
A press conference regarding the Gaza massacre and the dire humanitarian situation there and in the West Bank was called off following Israel's pressure on the Italian far-right ruling party, Brothers of Italy. The initiative had been scheduled at Italy's Chamber of Deputies to denounce the Israeli massacre of displaced people in Gaza and the Israeli settlers' growing violence against Palestinians in the West Bank. The press event was cancelled after Brothers of Italy's prominent lawmaker Giovanni Donzelli said that one of the attendees, Shawan Jabarin, who is the general director of a Palestinian human rights organization in the West Bank, belongs to an NGO banned by Israel for alleged links to terrorism.
Israel doesn't represent all Jews over the world. That's the case. And nothing in relation to Jewish or anti-Semitism. But I think the ideological, the political newspapers and the groups, or let me say research centers, they use that for political reasons, trying to silence anyone criticize Israel.
The cancellation of the press conference at the Italian Parlament goes beyond a smear campaign against a Palestinian who runs a human rights organization in Ramallah. During the press conference, lawmakers from a number of opposition parties, including the Democratic Party, the Five Star Movement, and the Green and Left Alliance, were supposed to discuss what role Italy could play in Gaza in view of a ceasefire and the recognition of the Palestinian statehood by Rome.
La pressione si manifesta.
Because of this pressure, Italy cowardly abstains from voting in favor of crucial UN ceasefire resolutions and Palestine statehood-related resolutions. It's not just that. Another result of this pressure on our government is that Italy continues to provide weapons to Israel, fueling the killing of tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Palestine. We don't want to be accomplices of terrorism and criminal policies. Italy must play a significant role in recognizing Palestine as a state.
The press conference with Italian lawmakers and Shawan Jabarin has been postponed to a later date.
The Italian government has maintained a stance of unconditional support for Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. However, public opinion surveys have consistently shown that a large number of Italians are opposed to the ongoing Gaza massacre and its impact on the civilian population there. Max Civili, Rome.
Thousands of Pakistanis have taken to the streets to commemorate the anniversary of Imam Hussein's martyrdom and to push his legacy forward by calling for an end to the violence in Gaza. Nasser Kazemi reports.
On the day of Ashura, mourners across Pakistan held processions to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his 72 companions. Muharram is the month of mourning for the followers of a third Shia Imam. On the 10th day of this month, Imam Hussein ibn Ali, the grandson of Holy Prophet Muhammad, embraced martyrdom in Karbala, located in southern Iraq. Since then, each year, Shia Muslims have commemorated this historic battle with grief, sorrow, and tears, keeping its message of resistance against injustice and tyranny alive. This year, the processions followed their traditional predetermined routes through various cities and towns across the country, including Karachi, Lahore, Rawalpindi, Quetta, Peshawar, and the capital, Islamabad.
The commemoration of Ashura this year is significant due to the ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza, which has left tens of thousands of Palestinians dead and millions of others displaced since last October.
The ceremonies in Pakistan were not only a reflection of the historical reverence of Karbala, but also a poignant reminder of the ongoing atrocities that the oppressed people of Palestine are facing today.
Another Karbala is going to happen because what we are witnessing in Palestine right now, that thousands of people has been displaced from their home. They are living in the camps. Their camps are frequently being targeted by Israeli tyrant forces. So practically they are living in the Karbala of the time. And what the Israelis are doing, they are playing the role of Shemer and playing the role of the Yazid.
Imam Hussein's mission was to stand against tyranny. This is exactly what the people of Gaza are doing today. Just as Imam Hussein resisted the corrupt rule of Yazid, the Palestinians are standing against the oppressive regime of Israel.
The mourners also voiced their solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza by calling on the international community to intervene and stop the genocide in Gaza. Nasser Kazemi, Islamabad.
Members of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria have joined other Muslims around the world commemorating Ashura. Our correspondent Anjum Abdullahi has sent this report from the Nigerian capital, Abuja, covering the event in detail.
The ceremonies began with a traditional chest beating to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his 72 loyal companions by the army of Yazid. The leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki, delivered a lecture where he emphasized the need for Muslims to turn mourning into resistance against oppression. Sheikh Zazaki said Imam Hussein was martyred in the fight against oppression. The Imam meant to save Islam from corruption. Zazaki asked the oppressed people of Gaza and around the world to have confidence in victory.
Our resistance should know no bounds. That means one has to be ready to sacrifice everything, including his own life. But it will be a little matter of little time. It will, in the end of the day, it will triumph. We have seen how Imam Hussein, because he has sacrificed his life, his legacy now has created a revolution.
Members of the IMN later marched through the streets, mourning and chanting elegies and eulogies of Imam Hussein while condemning the Israeli massacre in Gaza. The Ashura procession was cut short due to the imminent threat of an attack from the police. The mourners ended the ceremonies with a message for all the conscientious people around the world.
Wherever there is tyranny and oppression, it is mandatory for those who believe in God Almighty to stand against this tyranny and oppression. At this point in time, tyranny and oppression is everywhere, especially in the Middle East. When you go to Gaza, you see the definition of tyranny and oppression.
The mourners here say the martyrs of Karbala had sacrificed their lives to stand against oppression and to protect Islam. They say today it is also necessary to protest against tyranny and injustice, especially the Israeli cruelty against Palestinians. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, "Whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell."
In the limelight.
Donald Trump's former doctor says Joe Biden's doctor needs to address the American people and be open and honest with regards to Joe Biden's health. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story and tells us more. Representative Ronnie Jackson, Republican of Texas, who is a retired Navy officer and a former White House physician to both Presidents Barack Obama and Donald Trump, said that if Donald Trump would have shown severe neurological conditions, then Jackson would have been forced to the podium to face questions from journalists. Joe Biden's appointed physician refuses to speak on his health, Jackson tweeted on Wednesday, 10th of July. If I did that, as President Trump's doctor, there would have been immediate calls for me to resign and to impeach Donald Trump. Ronnie Jackson spoke to Fox News host Martha McCallum and said, "We can't believe what the Biden administration is saying sometimes because they use White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre as the mouthpiece to the medical reports involving the president. They either actively lie to you or they try to spin the facts and make you believe something that it is not true," Ronnie Jackson told Martha McCallum. "The press secretary's been doing that for a long time now." Jackson said he thinks it's inappropriate now, with all the concerns surrounding Joe Biden's health, that Karine Jean-Pierre is trying to bring the press on Biden's condition rather than Biden's physician, who was the White House physician for Joe Biden back in 2010. "This is Dr. Kevin O'Connor's job. He needs to be up there on the podium, and he needs to be the one up there briefing the American people," Ronnie Jackson emphasized. "Dr. O'Connor should be the one facing the media with objective data regarding Joe Biden's health. Bring those notes," Jackson told Martha McCallum. "Bring the information that was generated to the podium and show the American people that there's nothing wrong with the president and he doesn't have a cognitive issue if that's the case." The American newspaper, The New York Post, has also covered the same story. President Biden likely suffers from a cognitive disease and should not only drop out of the presidential race, but resign immediately, according to the former White House physician and current Republican congressman who served former Presidents Barack Obama and Donald Trump. The former White House physician and current Republican congressman Ronnie Jackson said this is a national security issue. He told the New York Post after Joe Biden's disastrous debate performance, he said, "As an American, I think he needs to step down and he needs to be immediately removed from office." Before entering politics, Ronnie Jackson served as Barack Obama's personal physician between 2013 and 2016. He also served as Donald Trump's personal physician between 2016 and 2018. Donald Trump raised Jackson's name during the televised CNN debate when the issue of their respective cognitive functions was discussed. Jackson, a former U.S. Navy Rear Admiral, said Biden's confused and halting performance during the televised debate was clear evidence he's suffering from more than just normal aging. "There is a condition. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to give him a diagnosis. It is more than just age. It is some type of cognitive disease," Jackson said. "I don't know if it's Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's. I don't know what it is. There are a lot of diseases out there when folks get older which can cause cognitive decline." Ronnie Jackson previously called on Joe Biden to take a cognitive test, something that Biden has not done as president. "You aren't going to hear me talk about cognitive tests anymore. He's got one on Thursday night in front of millions of viewers and he failed miserably," Jackson told the New York Post. Ronnie Jackson said if Joe Biden does not leave his own accord, his cabinet secretaries should consider invoking the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which allows the president to be removed from office if they deem him unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office and replaced by the vice president. Joe Biden and Donald Trump, at ages 81 and 78 respectively, are the two oldest candidates running for president, and the issue of their mental capacities have dominated news headlines for months and was a central question during the CNN televised debate. I took two tests, cognitive tests. I aced them, both of them, as you know. We made them public. Biden took none. I'd like to see him take one, Donald Trump said, whilst Biden looked on with bemused expression. Ronnie Jackson said he never identified any cognitive issues with Donald Trump. Anybody can sit down and talk to Donald Trump for hours on end. He's very sharp and he's an incredible memory. There has been no change whatsoever in his cognitive abilities since I have known him, Ronnie Jackson said. Joe Biden would be 86 years old at the end of a potential second term in office. Biden's shaky debate performance promoted a wave of new questions from close allies about whether he should continue to seek re-election. Team Biden has vowed to stay in the race and has already insisted he will go ahead with September's planned ABC-sponsored televised debate with Donald Trump. Sky News has also covered the same story and tells us more. Donald Trump says he expects Joe Biden to remain in the presidential race for the White House because he's got an ego and he doesn't want to quit the race. President Biden has shown no symptoms of Parkinson's disease, his doctor has explained in a letter released after reports claim a specialist has visited the president several times during the past year. Concerns around President Biden's health have risen since Biden's poor showing in his televised debate with Donald Trump. Democrats described his performance in the televised debate as an unmitigated disaster, a meltdown, and a slow-motion car crash. According to the New York Times, White House visitors' log shows that Dr. Kevin Kanad, a neurologist who specializes in movement disorders and recently published a paper on Parkinson's disease, visited the White House at least 8 times from last summer through to the spring of this year. However, Joe Biden's personal doctor, Kevin O'Connor, released a letter that insisted President Biden has not seen a neurologist outside of his annual physical exams. The results of this year's exam were detailed in my 28th of February letter. An extremely detailed neurological exam was again reassuring in that there were no findings which would be consistent with any cerebellar or other central neurological disorders such as stroke, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, etc.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, on July 14, 2015, the so-called P5 plus one in Iran signed the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Well, the deal was between the U.S., Russia, China, England, France, and Germany, along with Iran. The agreement states that Iran would cut back on some of its nuclear research and activities, while the other side was supposed to lift nuclear sanctions on Iran. But what happened to it all, and where does everyone stand now, 9 years later? I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer out of San Francisco. Well, thanks so much. Good having both of you with us. Let me start this off in Raleigh. And Ray, I mean, what are your overall thoughts about that original 2015 JCPOA agreement?
Well, it was a crowning achievement of the Obama administration. And to see it just frittered away under Trump was a very sorrowful thing. And it all had to do with the influence of Israel, which was even greater on Trump than it was on Obama, and that's saying a lot. The Zionist entity has the U.S. Where it wants it. We're talking about anniversaries here. This is the ninth from the JCPOA, but it's the 20th since National Security Advisor General Brent Scowcroft went to the Financial Times and complained that Prime Minister Ariel Sharon had President Bush wrapped around his little finger, that he had President Bush mesmerized. Those are the words of former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft, who then was chair of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. That's how much Brent Scowcroft wanted American people to know how much influence Israel had, not least because of the invasion of Iraq, which was a major factor in prompting Bush and Cheney to go ahead and depose Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, well, it's too bad that no one listened to him at that time. Well, Scott, how is it that the Western hegemonic front can exert an extreme amount of pressure on Iran for developing its peaceful nuclear program while the Israeli regime, as Ray just talked about, I mean, has nuclear weapons? And, of course, as we know, is committing genocide as we speak. But these Western countries continue to send more weapons, support the regime, and, of course, not demanding any accountability.
Well, Marzia, it's wonderful to be with you again. It's such a joy, and blessings upon you and the great Republic of Iran and
Thank
their
you,
new
Scott.
President. I would say we're entering a phase of tremendous delusion, spiritual darkness, madness that is coming upon the West, and the United States and Israel are really crumbling and falling apart. They're losing their minds, and I don't say that cynically, I say it clinically as a former PSYOP officer. I look at these people suffering in the State Department, the CIA, the Biden administration, who really is just a puppet of Obama pulling the strings, but they are seriously detached from reality and delusional and believing their own lies, and they're becoming toxic from their own lies. So we're seeing, as you wisely put, the genocide of the Palestinians, but at the same time, the waking up of the world to the evil of Israel. And Israel will never be forgiven for its genocide and murder of women and children and civilians. And the United States, as Ray said, the great shame of Donald Trump was pulling the United States out of the JCPOA by believing and following these fools and these reckless, warmongering, bloody savages like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and Nikki Haley and Mike Pence and all of these other bloodthirsty, corrupt criminals who were simply getting backhanded deals from the military-industrial complex. Trump wasn't smart enough or bold enough or righteous enough to stand up to them and do what the American people wanted. The American people wanted Iran and America to be at peace, to reunite, to have a relationship, and that is still our desire in America. No one has a feverish hatred for Iran except the Jewish Zionist Talmudic demoniacs. And sadly, as Ray said, they control and strangle the American Congress, but I do think their time is up. And I think the emergence of the BRICS multipolar world, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, those are all rising as the West is descending, but it's very dangerous because as the West descends, they become more and more maniacal, psychotic, and delusional. But there is, I think, great hope because as Russia, Iran, China emerge stronger, the world will flock to their side because they are representing peace and sovereignty while the West represents slavery and destruction and war.
Interesting comments. Well, Ray, I mean, if we look at, because Scott said we're on the verge of this changing world, but we look at, for example, the Europeans, one, they didn't keep to their side of the deal after the U.S. Withdrew. And on the other side, we saw just last month, actually, with the IAEA and with the help of the U.K., France, and Germany, actually increase the sanctions on Iran again. So, I mean, on the one hand, Scott says that we're perhaps in a transition. On the other hand, we still have the whole Western hegemonic entity acting illogical and aggressive.
And delusional, as Scott also said. That's the problem. I think that Netanyahu has so much at stake here, even his personal freedom. He needs to stay in this game. I can only explain his desire to go up against Hezbollah by saying, my God, he's risking it all. And what he thinks has got to be that when he gets mired down with Hezbollah, as well as in Gaza, the U.S. will have to come in. That's his calculation. In other words, I find him crazy as a fox. Now, most people would say, well, that's crazy. The U.S. is not going to come in. Well, look at the election year. Look at how malleable Biden and his advisors have been. Look how they all proudly claim themselves to be Zionists. Some of them are also Jewish, but Jewish doesn't matter here. That's a reputable fake. It's Zionism that's the problem. And our commander-in-chief and our president, of course, has said more than once, I am very proud to be a Zionist. So what he is doing is supporting Israel 150% in an election year that has to be 155%, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I dare say, I fear that Netanyahu is right in saying when push comes to shove, Hezbollah gets in, the U.S. will have to come to Israel's aid. And then the question, of course, will be whether they want to broaden it to Iran. And that will be an even more serious problem and mistake.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Scott, I mean, your thoughts on the fact that going back to the JCPOA, I mean, that the main part of the agreement, the United States, I mean, it is a country which has used weapons of mass destruction, and yet it wants to control a country like Iran, which has not been the aggressor of any nation, of course, since prior to the Islamic Revolution. I mean, so from the beginning, when we look at this, I mean, this hypocrisy in general, of course, more of this hypocrisy has been exposed during the last 9 months of this genocide and seeing these international entities just not reacting. But your thoughts on that? I mean, it is so difficult to swallow in so many ways that that country is telling Iran that they cannot have their nuclear, their peaceful nuclear research and activities while they have nuclear weapons. I mean, your take on this, what should independent countries do when trying to deal with this hegemonic entity?
Well, I think we're witnessing, Marzia, a tremendous shift in the fulcrum point of the geopolitical fortunes of the West compared to the Euro-Asian countries. Specifically, the game changer has been Russia, Iran, China, India, creating this economic alliance, which is a subtle political alliance as well, and a military alliance to a certain extent. So Russia has changed the game by challenging the West's war agenda against Russia in Ukraine. Russia entered to stop the NATO expansion. It is simultaneously reinforcing, I believe, the political agreements and alliances between Russia and Iran, Russia and North Korea, Russia and China, Russia and Vietnam, and India, of course, too, entering into agreements with Iran. These are very important geopolitical leverage points. It's a buoyancy, if you will, that is elevating Iran above the reach, above the murderous, bloody claws of death and destruction of the West. Iran is being elevated up by the buoyancy created by these international economic, political organizations and agreements. And Russia will no doubt not allow Iran to fall. So this notion of Netanyahu, who I think is a dead man walking and is very soon going to depart from this earth by his own military abandoning him because they realize the entire genocide is going to be hung around Israel's neck like a rubber tire and ignited on fire very soon. The world will never forgive Israel for this murderous rampage. And I have thought and hoped that every country would expel Israel's ambassadors and passports and not have anything to do with them. But I think Russia's rise is simultaneously going to nullify the West's additional delusion that they can step in and defend Israel from its attack upon Hezbollah. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Russia would step in, Iran would step in, North Korea, China would step in subtly, invisibly, but we would see weapons with the Houthis that would sink every American ship in the Persian Gulf, in the Indian Ocean, in the Red Sea, in the Mediterranean. I think we're really witnessing the rise of these other countries to militarily defend each other, and Iran is included in that. And the West, of course, is falling apart. The French are falling apart, the British, the Germans. The Germans, I think, will collapse in a mighty political revolution because, of course, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline was destroyed by Olaf Scholz, obediently looking the other way because his masters in the United States told him to, Anthony Blinken, Sullivan, and the rest of these people. So as the West begins to crumble and crack and decay in its own political turmoil and revolution, as leaders are replaced, I think it is only going to accelerate the freedoms and the liberties of countries like Iran to pursue exactly the energy, nuclear energy agenda that it wants without any respect to Israel's animosity or belligerency.
Okay. Well, what about that, Ray? Because we see the Israeli regime itself has nuclear weapons. Of course, no one is holding the regime responsible for that. No accountability. And of course, it was that regime that also pushed Trump even more to try to leave the agreement. So where are you? Where are we right now? Scott says he thinks that we're in this transition period. And with the rise of the BRIC nations, how do you see it? Your assessment of where it all stands right now, when we look at the position of the Israeli regime and we look at the absolute support from the Western hegemonic front, your assessment of it all, Ray?
My assessment comes from my experience as a current intelligence officer and analysis, in other words, a glorified journalist. My focus is on the next 4 months.
Okay.
They are critical months. Biden, whether he runs or not, the Democrats are in very, very serious trouble. Now, what does Netanyahu have to do with this? He could spark a conflagration with Hezbollah trying to bring Iran in, and whether the U.S., whether the people who are advising or making decisions for Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, whether they will do Netanyahu's bidding or not is a major question, whether it's good for the United States or not. So I would fear that one of the first things they would do would say, oh, Iran is actually now developing a nuclear weapon, despite the fact that the intelligence agencies, beginning in 2007, said that Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon in 2003, every year since has ratified that judgment, saying they're still not doing that. But there have been noises, actually, among serious senior generals in Iran saying, well, maybe we ought to reassess that. So what I see is a provocation by Israel trying to get the U.S. involved, not only against Hezbollah, but against Iran. And that's what I see in the next 4 months because of the presidential election and the felt need by these Zionists in power to do everything they can to protect Israel and, by extension, protect the money they get from Israel lobby APEC.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, Scott, what do you think? I mean, your assessment, well, Ray has said in the next 4 months he sees this happening. When you look at the overall situation in the region and beyond, what would be your prognosis?
I hope I'm wrong, Marzia, but I think we will not have an election in November. I think the Democrats are going to trigger a crisis, a false flag event, perhaps a strike upon America, and blame it on Russia, blame it on Iran, blame it on someone else, blame it on a Trump supporter. They may assassinate Biden. They may assassinate Kamala Harris. They could replace him with Gavin Newsom or Megan Whitmer or Michael LaVon Robinson, also known as Michelle Obama. They could trigger all sorts of internal combustion to create a police state environment where the Democrats hold on to power, and the RINOs would only be happy to do so as well. They've betrayed the American people by invading across the southern border, destroying the dollar, entering America into a war against Russia. I was there. I was in Belgorod and Cherubinka. I had drones attacking my hotel. So I saw with my own eyes the West's war against Russia, and I've prepared a war crimes report over it. But I sadly predict over the next 4 or 5 months, we are not going to have a smooth transition, an election. I think it's going to be really explosive, and they're trying to do this to create a war so they can hold on to power. Wars are very convenient smoke screens for political tyrants. I hope I'm wrong. But in that event, we need to be prepared for the fall of Rome. And I think that's where America is going towards, fall of Rome and a revolution, civil war, where I do think the people will emerge far more non-interventionist, more isolationist, more pacifist than we've ever been. All of this started in 9/11 with the great juggernaut going into Afghanistan, Iraq, then Libya, then Syria. Now with ambitions against Iran, against Ukraine. I think that's at an end. The American people have never wanted this, but it's taken a long time for them to wake up. But I do think we're going to be entering a time of severe combustion, and I would not doubt if the elections are scuttled or suspended by some national emergency that is self-inflicted.
Wow. Well, that's definitely quite interesting. We actually need to do a show specifically on that and dealing with the upcoming election. Hopefully we'll get you back on for that, Scott, in general. But Ray, I mean, looking back at Iran and the direction that the martyred President Ebrahim Raisi was taking Iran in and looking towards the global south, looking east, your thoughts and your assessment of that, because there are some, for example, in Iran who would say, okay, we need to then try to restart the dealings with the United States and see if we can get the sanctions taken off this time and perhaps revive the JCPOA. Your thoughts, Ray?
Well, I think that your new president is exercising due caution and a willingness to consider all options. I wouldn't close off the notion that in 4 months there might be a more respectful regime in Washington. Meanwhile, Iran now is part of BRICS. That's big. Iran now is very close to concluding an agreement with Russia, which is close to a mutual defense treaty. Yes. That was almost ready about two months ago. So Iran has been accepted by these giants, not only Russia, but China. The question is whether these neurotic, whether these people in charge, or whether it's Biden or the people around him, recognize that or care a whit about Americans and what they feel, and desire first and foremost to make sure that they stay in power so that they don't lose the election, so that they don't lose their freedom, because each and every one of them, not only Hunter, but Daddy and Lincoln and Sullivan, they got the goods on these people. And if that other fellow comes in, there's every reason to expect they could end up with serious jail time. So those are personal incentives. So hold on to your hat, strap onto your seatbelt, and above all, don't be provoked into doing something that the U.S. wants you to do.
Right, right. Well, Scott, let's talk about this phase right now that we're in. How dangerous is the message that the world has received during this last nine and a half months with what has been taking place in Gaza? That basically it sends a message of might makes right. I mean, and that each and every country has to fend for itself and has to be as strong as it possibly can. I mean, what type of scenario are we looking at with this type of mentality now?
Well, Netanyahu, of course, is a bloodthirsty savage who's lost his mind, and the images of little girls with their faces blown off and little boys with their legs missing and entire families destroyed under rubble, these are crimes against humanity. These are war crimes. And the United States has blood on its hands, and everyone in Congress has blood on their hands for financing and providing the weapons. And Netanyahu's alleged appearance over the United States when he comes, which I hope he'll be arrested for. Someone hopefully will do that. But he is coming over to try and gin up a warmongering hysteria, bloodlust. But it's inauthentic because the American people are not behind this. You will see more protesters in Washington, I think, than ever before to put a wall up against this war. But Netanyahu is also being hung out to dry by his own political leaders, who realize it's only a matter of time before Israel is exposed for killing their own citizens in the Hannibal Directive and for engineering, in fact, this October 7th attack with the ambition to use it as an excuse for genocide, to steal the oil and gas resources in the Mediterranean and to steal the real estate of the Gaza Strip. This has always been their agenda. They thought the world was going to look the other way, but they didn't. Iran stood up and called them out and stood to defend the Palestinians, and other countries have been rising up. Turkey, Egypt, Syria, Jordan, Malaysia, all of them, I think, have a great deal of offense by what has happened to these poor Palestinians. And the world has, too. All over the United States, colleges and universities and students are rising up. That's going to kick in more in the fall when they return to school, and all over Europe. So we've seen this great awakening to the murderous savagery of the Jewish, Israeli, Talmudic Zionists, and we've seen the face of the devil himself in their reflection. And that's something no one's ever going to forget. And you've seen the awakening of the BRICS nations and Asia and China and Russia. And I think you're also going to see the collapse of these European regimes who are going to be splitting apart. This is not something that the West, the Western people, the Christian people of the West, of America, of Europe, want any part of. And they've never seen this sort of brutality before. I know the Palestinians have. I know people in the Middle East have seen it. They've lived with it. Right. But in America, that has lived between two oceans and slept in the fatness of luxury in their economy, they've never seen this before. And I think they're finally going to step up and start acting to it.
All right.
We are in that moment of transition.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Scott Bennett, former U.S. Army psychological warfare officer out of San Francisco. Appreciate you guys being with me again. And appreciate you staying with us for another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM, 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
As-salamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah. وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, in the words of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible Imams in dialogue. Today's episode, Achieving the Reward of the Martyred Companions, in the words of Imam Reza alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza alayhi salam says to one of his companions, "If you desire that for you be the reward equivalent to that of those martyred along with Hussein alayhi salam, then whenever you remember His Eminence, say, 'Oh, would that I had been with them. A great achievement would I have achieved.'"
No one faced the pain like you did. No one faced.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Dialogue. We're talking about this statement from Imam Reza alayhi salam, in which the infallible and immaculate Imam speaks to one of his companions, and he says to him, "Do you wish that you had the reward of the martyrs that were martyred along with Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the land of Karbala on the 10th day of the month of Muharram in the year 61 after Hijrah?" It is such an amazing statement, because after the passing of over 1,000 years, The believers who have a fire and a heat in their heart, which will never subside, continue to wish and pray, how could we help Imam Hussein alayhi salam? Even though this is a part of the discussion that we will have